त्वमादितोत्पन्नहने विदर्भम् गुप्ता समेत्य पृतनापतिभिः परीता निर्मात्य चेद्य मगधेन्द्र बलं प्रसाय मां राक्षसेन विदिनोद्वह वीर्यशुल्कम् स्वभावनी त्वमजितोद्वहने विदर्भान् गुप्ता समेत्य पृतनापतिविपरीता निर्मात्य चेद्य मगधेन्द्र बलं प्रसाय मां राक्षसेन विदुनोद्वह वीर्यशुल्कम् स्वभाविनी त्वमजितोद्वहने विदर्भम् गुप्ता समेत्य पृतनापतिभिः परीता निर्मात्य चेद्य मगधेन्द्र बलं प्रसाय मां राक्षसेन विदिनोद्वह वीर्यशुल्कम्
Bhavini. Tomorrow. Twam. You. Ajit. O unconquerable one. Udvahane. At the time of the marriage ceremony. Vidarbhan. To Vidarbha. Gupta. Unseen, Samedya, coming, Pritana, of your army, Patibhi, by the leaders, Parita, surrounded, Niramatya, crushing,
Chedya,
of Chedya Shishupal,
Magadha
Indra,
and the king of Magadha, Jarasandha,
Balam,
the military strength,
Prasahya,
by force,
Mam,
me,
Rakshasena
Vidina,
in the
Rakshasa
style,
Udvaha,
take
in marriage,
Virya,
your
prowess,
Shulkam,
the
payment for
whom?
O
unconquerable one,
tomorrow when
my marriage
ceremony
is about
to begin,
you
should arrive unseen
in Vidarbha
and
surround yourself
with the leaders
of your
army.
Then
crush the
forces of
Chedya
and
Magadhendra
and
marry me
in the
Rakshasa
style,
winning
me with your
valor.
Purport.
As
Srila Prabhupada
points out
in Krishna,
the
Supreme
Personality of
Godhead,
Rukmini,
being born
of royal blood,
certainly
had a brilliant
grasp
of political
affairs.
She
advised
Sri Krishna
to enter
the city
alone
and unnoticed,
and
then
surround
himself with
his military
commanders
so
he could
do what
was needed.
Srila
Vishwanath
Chakrabarti
compares
the coming
fight
to
the Lord's
churning
of the ocean
to
extract
the goddess
Lakshmi.
Gorgeous
Rukmini,
the
goddess of
fortune,
would
be gained
in
the coming
turbulence.
Om
Agyanti
Midandasya
Yananjana
Chalakaya
Chakshurun
Militam
Jena
Tasmai
Sri
Guruve
Namaha
Vancha
Kalpa
Tarubhyascha
Kripa
Sindhubhya
Evacha
Atithanam
Bhavanibhyo
Vaishnavebhyo
Namo
Namaha
Sri
Krishna
Chaitanya
Prabhu
Nithananda
Sri
Advaita
Gadadhar
Sri
Vasudhi
Gaura Bhakta
Vrinda
Hare
Krishna
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 Hare
Hare
Hare Rama
O unconquerable one,
tomorrow
when my marriage
ceremony is
to begin,
you
should arrive
unseen
in Vidarbha
and
surround
yourself
with the leaders
of your
army.
Then
crush
the forces
of Chedya
and
Magadhendra
and
marry me
in the
Rakshasa
style,
winning
me with
your valor.
We
are reading
the beautiful
prayers
of
Rukmini.
In
her desperate
plea
to
Lord Sri
Krishna
to
save her
from
the unthinkable
and
unimaginable
tragedy
of her being
exploited
by the wicked demon Shishupal. We find in this story, being narrated by Sri Shukadev Goswami, that Rukmini, being so young, so beautiful, she is none other than the goddess of fortune. The Padma Purana explains that what Radharani is to Krishna in Vrindavan, Srimati Rukmini Devi is to Krishna in Dwarka. Just as there were so many thousands upon thousands of gopis in Braj Bhumi, but of those gopis, it is explained that 108 were prominent. And of those 108, the 8 Sakis are most prominent. But Srimati Radharani is the supreme most beloved and dear to Lord Sri Krishna. In fact, although Shamsundar was enjoying beautiful loving relationships with all of the gopis during the Ras Lila, when Srimati Radhikarani left that Ras Mandala, Krishna could experience no pleasure with none of the others. So he left all other Braj gopis to pacify the desires of Srimati Radharani. And of course, this story is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam because Shukadev Goswami wanted to make it very clear the supreme most position of Vrindavaneshwari, Sri Radhikarani. As the pleasure potency of the Lord, in whom Krishna is always captured by her love and her supremely devotional qualities. My Guru Maharaj gave me the name, by his causeless mercy, Radhanath Das. In Vrindavan, it is said that Krishna is always subordinate to the love of Sri Radharani. So then how is Krishna Radhanath, the Lord of Radha? It has been explained in various ways, from Krishna's point of view, he is always conquered by the love of Sri Radharani. But from Srimati Radharani's point of view, Krishna is always Radhanath, the Lord of her life. And one of Srila Prabhupada's dear friends was asked this question, and he said, Radhanath means the Lord of Radha, Sri Krishna, but it also is a name of Radharani, Radhanath, which means Radha, who is the Lord of Krishna. So in this way, so many wonderful, wonderful moods in which we can understand the beautiful, wonderful pastimes of Vrindavan Dham. But in any case, it is being explained by Padma Purana that just as Srimati Radharani has such complete prominence in Vrindavan's Leela, in the same way Rukmini, who is an expansion of Srimati Radharani, to enjoy the Aishwarya Ras, or the beautiful pastimes of awe and reverence in Dwarka, Srimati Radharani appears as Rukmini. And she has the same prominence over all the queens of Dwarkadham. So here we are being given the most wonderful story of the first meeting of Krishna and Rukmini. Rukmini was the daughter of a king of the name Bhishmaka. And King Bhishmaka was a very great devotee. And in the kingdom of such great devotees, great saints and sages, great Vaishnavas would always be coming to visit. You see, it is natural that devotees are attracted to those places where they are sincerely desired. Just like Srila Prabhupada, one time his devotees were in a particular place and they were very much not welcome. And nobody was appreciating anything they were trying to do, although they were sacrificing so much of their lives to try to give these people Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada said, then you leave that place. He said, you go where people are willing to appreciate the message that you are trying to give them. So if we really want great Vaishnavas to come to our homes or to come to our place of residence, then simply we have to genuinely and sincerely appreciate what they want to give. And then for sure such devotees will find the greatest pleasure and happiness and the greatest meaning in coming to that place. So such great devotees were always coming to the kingdom of Bhishmaka because he was giving them all facilities to render their service to the Lord. And while there, they were always explaining the glories of Lord Sri Krishna, because they understood what a great personality Krishna was. So Rukmini, she was hearing again and again the glories of Lord Krishna. And because she is none other than Lakshmi Devi, the supreme goddess of fortune, when she would hear the beautiful pastimes of Lord Krishna, hear his names and qualities, it would naturally awaken the love within her heart. In a similar way, we are all eternally Krishna's loving servants. It is our constitutional position to know Krishna and to love Krishna, to surrender our lives for the pleasure of Krishna. And although we have forgotten our real life, when we hear the glories of the Lord, when we hear the names of the Lord being spoken by great personalities who are sincerely surrendering to the mission of the Lord, this sound vibration awakens our original natural consciousness. Rupa Goswami describes adoshada tatha sadhu sangutha bhajanakriya tato narta nivishtisha tato nishta ruchistata atha shaktistamo bhava, that the process of Krishna consciousness begins when we associate with sincere devotees of the Lord. And when we hear them speak, an ordinary person who speaks Krishna Katha cannot have any potency in his words to awaken your dormant love of Krishna. Nor can impersonal philosophers. Only a genuine Vaishnav who is humbly endeavoring to be the servant of the servant of the Lord and repeat his message in a mood of devotion, only such a person does Krishna agree to appear within the sound vibration of his words? When such a person speaks, it awakens faith within our heart. And when we associate with such persons, that faith is nourished. And gradually it awakens within our heart our natural inclination to want to be Krishna conscious, to want to serve the Lord, to want to please the Lord. But it doesn't end there. Then we have to be willing, bhajana kriya. We have to be willing to perform tapasya. We have to be willing to surrender to their instructions in order to actually purify ourselves, to make this desire that has awakened in our hearts a realization. It is not something so cheap. We have to be willing to fight against Maya at that point. When we hear from the great sages and we understand what is Krishna consciousness, we understand that I am ensnared and entrapped in material energy. And there are so many of the agents of Maya, like an army all around me. They are surrounding me and they are trying to keep me bound to these senses and their objects. They're trying to keep me away from Krishna. Because basically, those who are around us, although they may be so-called well-wishers, they are envious of Krishna. Anyone who desires their own personal sense enjoyment in life is envious of Krishna, because everything is meant for Krishna's pleasure. So when we hear the words of the great souls, at that time, we have to be willing to fight. We have to be willing to really pray to Krishna and take risks and separate ourselves from those envious forces around us trying to deliver our consciousness and our life to Maya. That was the position of Rukmini. Her father heard her plea that I want to marry Krishna. And he wanted so much that she marry Krishna. But her brother, Rukmi, was an envious rascal. He hated Krishna. Why did he hate Krishna? Because he was envious. Because Krishna had everything he wanted. And he knew he could never get it from Krishna. So he wanted to somehow or other defy Krishna. And how did he want to defy Krishna? Rukmini, her heart was exclusively given to Krishna, but Rukmi demanded that we give our daughter in marriage, our sister, to Shishupal, who happened to be the number one most envious enemy of Krishna. And the father, because of the customs of the day, he couldn't really deny the terribly aggressive demands of the eldest son. So King Bhishmaka basically just kind of remained neutral and let his son take over. And everything was arranged that Shishupal was to marry Rukmini. And the marriage was about to take place on the next day. And who did Shishupal invite as the special guests to attend this marriage? Jarasandha, who happened to hate Krishna so much. He was the father-in-law of Kamsa. Everyone knows how much Kamsa hated Krishna. Kamsa hated Krishna so bad. In his previous life, he was Kalanemi, and he fought against Lord Narayan during the Battle of the Ocean of Milk.
And Lord Vishnu killed this Kalanemi, who came and attacked him while riding on a lion. And because he died with such terrible envy toward the Lord, when he was born again, he became Kamsa. And Kamsa was told that in your last life, you were killed by Vishnu. So he was thinking, in this life, I will avenge him and I will kill him. Kamsa was so powerful that when he was young, he used to love to wrestle, and he would just defeat and kill practically anybody he'd wrestle. And then when he got a little older, he decided, in order to kill Vishnu, and in order to conquer the world, I have to get all the asuras to be my servants. So he traveled all over the world, wherever there was any asura, and he would challenge them to battle. That if you defeat me, then I'll be your servant. But if I defeat you, you have to surrender to me and be my servant to the day you die. You have to live and die for me. So he killed, he didn't kill, but he defeated expertly everybody. He went to where Trinavarta was living, where Dhenukasura was living, where Aghasura was living, where Pralambasura was living, Bhomasura, Banasura. All the demons we read in Krishna's Leela, Vivida, Vatsasura, Vyomasura, Keshiasura. He went to each of them individually and challenged them to battle. And they fought with him, and he easily defeated all of them until they were at the verge of death. And then he would tell them, I will spare your life, but you have to be my servant forever. And they would say, yes, we are surrendered to you. And then ultimately, when Devaki and Vasudev were being married, Kamsa, who attained such power, he conquered every other asura on the planet and even beyond. He even defeated Indra in battle. He was so powerful. When he was driving that chariot and that divine voice spoke that the eighth son of Devaki will kill you, he was about to kill his sister. But Vasudev, through good argument, saved Devaki with the agreement that all the sons would be delivered to Kamsa. And Kamsa began to kill each and every one of the sons of Devaki. And when the eighth son, Krishna, was within the womb, he saw that Devaki became so effulgent, so brilliant. She was actually emanating all the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He understood, my enemy Vishnu is in her womb. And when he tried to kill Krishna, of course, he could not be successful. Vasudev, while they were all in mystic slumber, brought Krishna and others to, Krishna to Gokul, came back with Yogamaya, and Yogamaya told Kamsa that the eighth son, Vishnu, has been born somewhere else. So then Kamsa started bringing all of his servants, all the demons from all over the planet he was sending for them, and sending them into Vrindavan. And Krishna was killing all of them, one by one. Kamsa also defeated Chanura and Mustike in wrestling. Ultimately, Krishna defeated them, and then Krishna easily killed Kamsa. Jarasandha was also a servant of Kamsa. It was for this reason, when Kamsa saw the unbelievable, notable strength of Kamsa. When Kamsa defeated Jarasandha in battle, Jarasandha gave his two daughters, Asti and Prapti, to Kamsa. So when Krishna killed Kamsa and left Jarasandha's two daughters as widows, he became terribly envious of Krishna. He wanted bitter revenge. Again and again and again he would attack Mathura with many, many Akshahini divisions of soldiers, up to 23. 23 Akshahini divisions of soldiers is more than the total amount of soldiers on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And just Jarasandha's army, very powerful person. Anyways, he was one of the chief guests that Shishupal invited to the wedding between Rukmini and Shishupal. And all whatever other demons were remaining, they were all there. So Rukmini was thinking, what a terrible circumstance I'm in. But Krishna can save me. I'm about to be completely surrendered over, handed over to demoniac, materialistic, envious forces. In the same way, in this material world, when you associate with sadhus, you hear their words, devotion to Krishna starts awakening in your heart, you want to make spiritual advancement, then you realize that even the name of loved ones and friends and relatives, they're like Rukmis. They want you to remain, they want to keep you with Shishupal and his envious materialistic colleagues. They want you to drink, they want you to dance to nonsense music, they want you to eat all nonsense foods, they want you to watch the television and go to the cinema, and they want you to smoke cigarettes, or they want you to get lots and lots and lots of money and marry somebody who's very prestigious and beautiful and handsome and who will give you all sorts of material enjoyments. In the name of love, they are like Rukmi, envious of Krishna. You're trying to be a chaste, faithful devotee, trying to live according to the nature of the soul, but they want to cast you into such an environment. And the fact is, you're already in that environment. You're already surrounded by the armies of Shishupal, by Maya, by the agents of Maya. And your own loved ones, like Rukmi, are trying to keep you there forever. And when they see you have an inclination toward Krishna, they want to break that by fixing you in such a situation where you become completely trapped with vows to remain faithful to material life. What is our hope? We must follow in the footsteps of Rukmini. We must pray to Krishna, please save me. Raghunath Das Goswami, even though his parents were actually devotees, still they were very materialistic. And Raghunath wanted to give his heart and life to Krishna. Whether you're a man or a woman, we are all meant to be the chaste wives of Krishna. We are all meant to be faithful and chaste servants of Krishna. In this sense, we are all Prakriti, Krishna's Purusha. We are all female. We are all meant for Krishna's enjoyment. But material energy is trying to steal us away and make us unchaste and unfaithful. We cannot allow this to happen. So Rukmini cried out for Krishna to save her. And of course,
Krishna always hears the prayers of his devotees. But not only did Rukmini cry out for Krishna to save her, but she was also willing to give up everything else to be saved. If Rukmini sent all these beautiful words, Krishna, please save me, I'm being surrounded by Maya, do you think what would happen if Krishna came with all his armies and said, Rukmini, get on the chariot? And she said, oh, what will my father say? What will my mother say? All the wedding arrangements are already made, don't you see? It's the day of the marriage. How can I just leave now? It will be a disgrace to my family. What will the rest of my caste say about us? No, not like that. She prayed to Krishna, you come, but she was willing to go with him. Similarly, when you pray to Krishna, you better be ready to go when he comes. Sometimes we pray, Krishna, take away these material attachments, bring me to you. And then Krishna starts taking away the material attachments and you say, what are you doing, Krishna? Why are you doing like this? I didn't mean it like that. What will people say? When you pray to Krishna, you have to be ready. He's going to come. He's going to fulfill your prayer. He's going to take you away from all these things. Yasya aham anagrinami harishye taddhanam shanai. Krishna says, when I show the installment of my mercy, oftentimes I take everything away to detach you from all this bondage. Rukmini was willing to give up everything behind. Her life was backing her prayers. She was willing. We were discussing Raghunath Das Goswami. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that, Raghunath, your parents and your environment all around you is trying to keep you in material life. Every time you try to run away to go to Jagannath Puri, they capture you and bring you back. In the name of love, Raghunath Das Goswami, every day he would run away from home trying to take shelter of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And every day the family would send guards and police to capture him and forcibly drag him back and engage him in worldly activities. He was actually a prisoner of their material attachments. Because in material life, if someone is materially attached, they want you to become just like them. Because that is their standard of happiness, even though they're suffering. They want you to inherit all their suffering and bondage in the name of love. That is material life. So Raghunath Das Goswami was told by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you just pretend like you're attached to all these material things. And you pacify them. But in your heart, don't be attached to anything. Just always be praying for Krishna to deliver you. And at the right time, Krishna will arrange so that you will be freed from all of these entanglements and you will attain uninterrupted, unobstructed loving service to the Lord. So we see that when the opportunity came, when Yadunandanacharya told Raghunath in the middle of the night, come and help me, Raghunath saw that this is Krishna. Krishna's arranged this. I have the opportunity to leave. What did he do? He left. He went to Krishna. He went to Mahaprabhu. But first he was tested. He was kidnapped. He was chastised. Everything. Krishna does not free you easily. You have to go through turmoil, pain. You have to go through a great crisis in your life, and you have to remain firm in your resolution before Krishna will actually come and take you away from this material energy. Raghunath spent years in bondage, always keeping his mind faithfully fixed in Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. And then he was given the opportunity. In the same way, Rukmini, she was just a young girl. What could she do to defend herself against such Maharati Kshatriyas that were surrounding her? And nobody cared what she had to say. She was ordered. She had no choice. The entire atmosphere was against her. By material standards, she had no hope. But she prayed to Krishna. She heard the glories of Krishna. She had faith in Krishna. And she prayed to Krishna. And she was ready to do whatever Krishna wanted her to do. And how wonderful of an example it is that Krishna, he came and took Rukmini away at the last possible second, just when she was about to be, Shishupal was right there, she was just about to be connected with him. In a matter of seconds, it would have been too late. And right then, as Shishupal, it is explained that Rukmini was so beautiful that as she was coming out of the temple of Amba, the Kshatriya princes, they were literally falling off their chariots. They were so lusty because she was so beautiful. And Shishupal, upon seeing her, he was utterly infatuated. And just when he was about to have the fulfillment of all his desires in life, to be united with such a beautiful, wonderful woman, just when he was about to think that I am victorious, finally, I have defeated Krishna. Because everyone knows she's attached to Krishna, and everyone knows Krishna is attached to her, but I'm about to get her. On every level, subtle and gross, he was absolutely, thoroughly attached to this wonderful arrangement being made. And just at that point, Krishna will appear. Hariyo! And snatch her away. And Rukmini, when Krishna comes and says, "Get on my chariot," she doesn't look back. She doesn't look back at what she's been given or what she had or what her relationships are. She doesn't care what the society thinks. Understand, what is she asking Krishna in this prayer? She is coming from a superbly cultured royal family where everything is done in a very, very proper, very distinguished manner. And she's telling Krishna that you kidnap me like the Rakshasas do it. It's called a Rakshasa marriage, when you're kidnapped. She didn't care. Of course, if people in this world, for their own sense gratification, in this world today in Kali Yuga, everyone's having Rakshasa marriages, right? But it's abominable. We should not compare ourselves to Rukmini, or we should not compare ourselves to Krishna. Rukmini had completely pure motives to surrender to the absolute truth. Just as the gopis, because they were surrendering to Krishna, even though they left their husbands in the middle of the night, it was considered the supreme most purest form of spiritual morality, even though they broke all traditions of the material sense. Rukmini was willing to do the same thing. Rakshasa marriage. She's saying, "Come, Krishna, let us have a Rakshasa marriage. It's the only way, but I'm willing, anything for you." and try to understand. Rukmini did not want to enjoy Krishna. In the heart of Rukmini, there was not the slightest tinge of desire for her own selfish pleasure. She had no ego. She simply understood that my life, my soul, my everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. It wasn't that she was simply infatuated by Krishna's beauty for her own self. She was a completely purified soul. She's in fact the pleasure potency of the Lord. But she understood that Krishna, I'm meant for your enjoyment, and I will not be enjoyed by anybody. Mind, words, and life are only meant for your service. I am surrendered to you. This was her mood. A mood of total selfless sacrifice. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares the coming fight to the Lord's churning of the ocean to extract the goddess Lakshmi. A very similar example in which we were explaining how Raghunath had to be churned through all sorts of opposition, and so did Rukmini. A model example being quoted by the great Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is the churning of the ocean of milk. You know the story. The demigods and the demons, they wanted nectar. So they made alliance. And they first had to pick up the Mandara mountain, which is a big, gigantic mountain of gold. And they had to bring it to the ocean of milk, which was far distance away. And as they were trying to lift it up, the demigods and the demons, first they had to make truce with their own enemies for this nectar. Then as they were trying to lift it, it was so heavy, their arms were breaking, their fingers were breaking, they were being crushed to death, they were being tortured by the weight of this mountain. But they just kept trying and trying. Ultimately they said, Vishnu, help us. So Vishnu lifted the mountain and brought it. Then when they were about to churn, they took the snake, the king of the serpents, Vasuki, and they went to start churning this mountain. And the mountain started sinking deeper and deeper and deeper into the ocean. And it was about to disappear. And they were trying to hold it up, but they couldn't. It was torturous, tragedy, crisis. And they all cried to Vishnu, and he appeared as Kuramavatar and sat under the mountain to support it. And then when they were doing it, the top started going like this. And they couldn't hold the top straight. So Vishnu, they cried out to Vishnu again, and he appeared as Ajita. And he was on the top of the mountain holding it. And then as they were churning, the serpent Vasuki started, he got so tired and worn out by all this churning of his body that this fire started flying out of his mouth. It started burning people to ashes. Again, Vishnu appeared as light rains to cool Vasuki off. And then they were churning and churning and churning and nothing was happening. And they were getting so tired, they couldn't churn anymore. And then Krishna incarnated as the mode of goodness to give strength to the demigods, and in the mode of passion and ignorance to give strength to the demons so that they can continue. And they churned and they churned, and what was the first thing that came out? Hala, hala! Poison. Deadly poison. One drop could destroy all humanity. And there was just volumes of poison pouring out of this ocean, being churned out. They had to cry out to Vishnu again. He said, you go to Shiva. And Lord Shiva, out of his supreme compassion for all living beings, seeing that everyone was going to be destroyed by this poison, Lord Shiva, who is such a magnanimous divine personality, an expansion of the supreme absolute truth, he took the poison, he condensed it all, he drank it. He was willing to drink all the poison of the universe just to relieve us from the terrible consequences of this poison. He became known as Nilakanta because his throat turned black due to the effects of this poison. And then they churned again. And so many wonderful things were coming out. And one of the things that came out was Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. And she was so beautiful. All the demigods, all the demons, they all wanted to marry her. So they had Swayamvara, where she could choose her own. And everyone was showing off in whatever way they could to attract her attention. But then she saw Lord Narayan, and she brought the garland of victory and put it on him. And the demigods were very happy, and the demons were very angry. Who is this Narayan? So in the same way, we should know that when we want to attract Krishna's mercy, when we pray to him, he teaches us the process of churning our hearts. And the churning will take place. All sorts of poisons will come up. All sorts of opposition will come into our life. But we must follow in the footsteps of Rukmini. We must be perfectly chaste. We must be perfectly faithful to Krishna. We must be willing to accept whatever he asks of us in the process of being his servant. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, Krishna is our true husband. Material husbands are mortal husbands made of past stool and material husbands are made of past stool, bones and muscles. So how old is household affairs? Like, if you have a choice to come and directly worship the Lord, how important is household affairs? Because yesterday you said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur themselves, they left very early in their life, they renounced. They should have been protecting their wives. Now they did that when they were supposed to protect their wives, same time when wives, when they know that their real husband is Krishna. So how important is household affairs?
You are not so advanced as them. Do not try to imitate these Nitya Siddha bhaktas. You have to follow the regulative principles of Krishna consciousness. And that means that the safe path for most persons who are not able and willing to renounce everything, who still have too much ego and too much attachment, is to follow Grihastha Ashram and to follow it under the guidance of saintly persons. Then you will, in a very honest and in a very secure manner, you will make spiritual progress toward the goal of life. But if you jump like a monkey trying to imitate these great renunciates, when you don't have that realization, when you don't have that detachment, then you will simply commit offenses and you will not make proper spiritual advancement. So therefore, these great souls, we must understand how unusually advanced they are. And we must simply look up to them and worship their lotus feet, but don't try to imitate them. Follow in their footsteps. Understand their exclusive devotion to Krishna and aspire for that. But we also find Advaita Acharya. His appearance day is coming up Friday in Car Center. We'll be discussing his glories. He was a householder. His beloved wife was Sita Thakurani. He never left her. And Srivas Thakur, he was married to Malini. And Chandrasekhar Acharya, he was married to Malati. And Shivananda Sen, he was also a Grihastha. And Nityananda Prabhu, he was married to Vishuddha and Janava. Sudama Vipra, he was also married. Vishishta Muni, Vishwamitram, or Vishishta Muni at least, he was also. Arundhati. So, we understand that there are great souls in the Grihastha Ashram. By perfectly practicing their ashram, they attain the supreme perfection, every bit as high as the others. Are you going to say that Raghunath was more advanced than Advaitacharya or Nityananda Prabhu? They were all in their own right in the most advanced stages of Krishna consciousness. So therefore we must understand that there is a message, a divine message in the lives of all of these great acharyas that we are to learn from. But the essence of all of their lives is complete, exclusive devotion to Krishna. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in South India, the Kurma Brahman, he also became a pure unalloyed devotee, and he wanted to leave his family. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, you stay with them. And you worship Krishna together. Keep Krishna in the center. Whoever you meet, you tell about Krishna. He said, you use your family arrangement as an opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness and always chant the holy names. And your life will be perfect. Don't leave them. That was his instruction to almost everybody. His instruction to Raghunath Das was very rare. His instruction to Rupan Sanatan was rare. They were exceptions. To the general population of people he was preaching to, he told them, you stay in the condition you're in and you become Krishna conscious. You put Krishna in the center. Whoever you meet, you discuss Krishna and always chant his names. Yare deka thare kaha Krishna upadesh amara goi guru hai thare desh. So we need spiritual guidance. We don't know what's best for us. If we think we do, we are condemned from any spiritual advancement. That is the first principle of devotion, that I am a fool. I must have the guidance of senior devotees, and they will guide me. And if they tell me that you remain, that Grihastha life is best for you, then you accept it, and you be a first-class Krishna conscious Grihastha, and you will attain perfection. And if they tell me if you can do it, you be a brahmachari, then you try, you go for it. Krishna conscious society needs both first-class Grihasthas, first-class renunciates. They are both essential. And we have to work together in the mission of Lord Chaitanya to give Krishna bhakti to society. Does that answer your question?
What about wives?
Same thing. Why you're segregating? The same principle is there. What is the difference? If they are both living together in Krishna consciousness, they will both go back to Godhead. The wife, according to the culture that Krishna has created, the wife is supposed to be a chaste, faithful servant of a Krishna conscious husband in Grihastha life. According to materialistic ways, everyone's fighting for the top position. The Vedic culture is the wife is the faithful, chaste servant of the husband. And if this husband's Krishna conscious, facilitates Krishna consciousness, then her life will be perfect. If she puts Krishna in the center and surrenders to Krishna through that process. And there was no such thing as divorce in Vedic culture. People were peaceful and happily living together because religious principles were first and foremost. In the Western society, traditionally it was the same way in religious circles, but Western society became so irreligious that the modern ways is that, what is this chastity and faithfulness and service to husband? Everyone wants to be the Lord. Everyone wants to be the enjoyer. And therefore, 67% divorce rate within 3 years. Broken families, broken homes, children insecure, becoming drug addicts, alcoholics, juvenile delinquents. The whole society's on fire and turmoil because no one wants to be a humble servant. Everyone wants to be an enjoyer. Huh? So take your pick. Which culture you want to give your life to and your family to? The culture given God, ordained by Krishna, or ordained by manipulative, exploitative, conditioned souls? It's the difference between Vedic civilization and Western civilization. We don't care for it. We will accept Krishna's words. Does that answer your question? But that doesn't make the wife less. Nowhere in Vedic culture does it say that women are less. The gopis had the highest position. The Brahmin's wives had the highest position. They accept a subordinate position. But they have no, but never are they given any less opportunity to be Krishna conscious. They have every access, whether you are man or woman on the path of bhakti, you have complete access to coming before the Lord and giving your life to the Lord. And no one can stand between anyone and the right to surrender to Krishna and worship Krishna and love Krishna. So for the purpose of sanctity, there must be a distinguished separation between men and women. That must be there. There must be a respectful separation between men and women. But other than that, there is no discrimination. Any other questions? Yes.
Maharaj, you were just saying that family ties and relatives in form of Rukmi, they try to take you away from Krishna. So in this process of understanding, how do you know that you're actually detached to these things or you're trying to run away from reality? Trying to be stolen.
You know when you're detached. You know when you're attached. When Krishna says, get on my chariot, and you say, but what about all of them? What will they say? If you're willing to accept what you are supposed to do in Krishna consciousness, then you know you're detached. If you're asked to eat only vegetarian foods, no garlic, no onions, and your family members are saying, why not take it? We'll feel bad if you don't. And you say, well, I don't want to make you feel bad, so I will eat anything. Huh? If you say, with all respects, my dear relatives, this is the vows I've taken. Kindly respect it. And if they don't respect it,
then don't have anything to do with them. He has realizations of this. Or at least don't have anything to do with them on that level. What else? Does that answer your question?
Your duty towards them, we are in this material world, we are grastas, but what is your duty towards them? We actually, when they are in some problem and in the mood of saying Krishna conscious, sometimes we try to run away from responsibilities towards them. Don't you think we become very stone-hearted
those types of obligations should not divert your attention away from Krishna consciousness. If they try to make you obliged to activities which are contrary to Krishna consciousness, you should reject it. But if it's to help them as family members when they are in need, and in the process, at least you should make the endeavor to give them an appreciation of Krishna consciousness in the process. In other words, certain responsibilities are part of Grihastha Ashram, but they should not be contrary to the principles of Krishna consciousness. And you should be thinking of ways and means to directly or indirectly inject Krishna consciousness in their hearts in the process that will spiritualize that obligation. You can give them prasad, or you can somehow or other preach to them. But you cannot be stone-hearted. Because in Grihastha life, there are certain moral, social responsibilities we have to accept, which may appear mundane. We should try to spiritualize them as far as possible, but they should not be based on sinful activities. A sannyasi is no longer obliged to any of those things, but a grihastha is morally obliged to some extent. So you have to accept those responsibilities, but do it in a distinguished Krishna conscious manner. Otherwise, it will be bad for preaching. No one will take you seriously if you don't accept at least a minimum of those responsibilities when they have to be done. Prabhupada used to say, do the needful. If your mother's dying and she says, please come and help me, and you say, this is Maya, let her die, that is not grihastha look. Sannyasi can do that if he wants, but grihastha cannot do that. You go and you help her, but it doesn't mean you give her meat. You try to help her in as Krishna conscious a way as you possibly can. That is your moral duty as a grihastha. Anything else, Prem Leela Mataji? Last but not least.
I know one sannyasi even, that his father passed away 3 years ago, and then he stayed with him in California, I think it was, and then he brought the ashes to the Ganges. And then a group of devotees went with him to the Ganges, and he threw the ashes in the Ganges. There was some kind of ceremony also, and a feast was held like that. So for sannyasis, that's okay, I guess. Also.
Yes, he is not obliged. Grihasthas are obliged to these things. Sannyasis are not obliged. But if a sannyasi sees that there's some way to help a person become Krishna consciousness, it's not that there's a restriction against that.
Next, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I heard at one point he was demanding that his wife assist him more in the actual, I'm not sure, printing or something with the books or something, with the actual devotional service as opposed to just the taking care of the kids. And there were a lot of children, of course. And he's maybe threatened her that if you don't help me, then you and the kids can leave. Did you hear this?
I never heard this.
Never heard that one?
I cannot comment on something I never heard of.
Okay.
But I can say this, that taking care of 10 children and raising them in Krishna consciousness is a very full-time service. We have seen one of our Matajis has 2 children and she has no time for anything. To speak of 10. And they all became nice devotees. So we worship her lotus feet. Whether Bhaktivinoda Thakur chastised her or not on this transcendental platform, we still worship her lotus feet. Being a mother is also a service to the Lord. We should not think that being a mother is maya, that we have to dress the deities and distribute books to serve the Lord. That is a service. But if you're a Krishna conscious mother, that in and of itself is a service. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very enthusiastic to engage everyone in devotional service, more and more devotional service. Yes?
And such differences arises. Many times they say that, well, I'm helping you in Krishna consciousness, I'm making you more detached from me.
What?
Talking between husband and wife.
Yes.
When there are some differences, or when they say, why are you irritating me? Sometimes this answer we get that, well, I'm helping you in Krishna consciousness to make you more detached.
That's what your wife tells you. Just chant Hare Krishna. Huh? Both chant 16 rounds every day. The wife is not supposed to make you detached like that. You'll become detached anyway. The wife is supposed to cooperate and help you in your service. If you want to do some nonsense thing, then she can try to make you detached. But if you want her to assist you in your Krishna conscious life, she should assist you. You shouldn't use this justified excuse of being disobedient in the name of being your servant by making you detached, by being such a disobedient, disrespectful woman. I'm actually your best servant. Not like that. Might be true on a higher level, but... But don't try to imitate the higher level. You should try to cooperate and live in harmony with the desire of our spiritual master. Haribo, thank you very much.